The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
I'm calling in from Las Vegas this morning.
And I'm in Phoenix in the airport. So we're kind of on the go today, but we're glad to be here to do the show.
Yes, and even though I'm in Vegas, I guess I'm a boring sort of guy. I came in last night, set up my material for the show we're doing today, and then I came to my hotel room and read books. Didn't go to any shows, didn't go gamble, didn't drink. Most of the things that Las Vegas has to offer, I'm just not interested in.
Good for you.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about actually some of the same material that I'm presenting in Vegas here. Seven secret strategies to protect your wealth from creditors, predators, and the IRS. This is actually some material that I've given around the country a number of places a number of times. But at the end of the day, before we're done here, we're going to show or tell our listeners a way that they can potentially save up to $5.5 million in transfer taxes just by taking a few simple steps before the end of the year.
Great. I know there's a number of listeners and certainly a number of our clients out there that that could not only potentially do that, but could actually do that. I'm going to be meeting with two or three of those today and in my meetings that I have scheduled. So it's a good tip and a hot topic for today's world.
So we'll get to that, but let's begin right now with the strategy number one of our seven strategies. And this strategy is a simple one, but it's one that surprisingly gets overlooked, and that is to, I call this the estate review. And I want to begin by kind of illustrating this with a story. Some decades ago, actually, there was a manufacturing company that was wanted to test whether its lighting, the lighting it had in its workroom, made any difference in the effectiveness of their workers. So they installed new lights in part of their facility and kept the old lights in the old part of their facility. And then they made an announcement to their workers that they were going to be evaluating their efficiency and performance to see if the new lighting made any difference. Now, in fact, they had been evaluating the efficiency and performance of the employees all along. It's just that the employees didn't know this. And they were surprised to see that as soon as they made the announcement that they would be watching performance and efficiency, immediately it went up. And they noticed that it went up with the lights, and it went up in their control group where there was no change in the lights. And in fact, they changed the lights back down, and they moved the lights all over the place, and they found that, at least in this particular facility, that in fact the lights made no difference whatsoever. But what did make a difference was having everybody know that their performance and their efficiency and effectiveness was going to be monitored and evaluated. So the point of all that is that looking changes everything. If you're looking at what you're doing, you're going to do something different. And this is particularly true in our legal and financial and all the related planning issues that that come up with that. So as we go through this, I'm recommending that people pull out your documents. Most people have some documents. And in fact, if you have no documents, that would be an indicator that maybe you need to take some action here. But pull out your documents, lay them out on a table. I know that my wife and I actually once a year, we do this as part of a couple retreat. We will go away for a day or two, depending on how much we can get away from our children, and we will lay them all out and look at them all. And so some questions to ask, are they complete? Do you have all the things that you should have? And how much you need depends a lot on where you are in life, how much you have to deal with, and how much you have going on in your family. So are your documents complete? Are they up to date? When was the last time you freshened up some of your planning documents? There are certain kinds of documents in a planning situation that have a shelf life. If they get too old, too stale, they will, even if they're technically legally effective, will, as a practical matter, you won't be able to use them, because I've had the experience with my clients of them just being the bank or the financial institution or even the healthcare institution that's presented this document will say, that's too old. The law has changed. We don't know if their intent has changed. We're going to refuse to honor it. So just having them up to date. And then a huge one in reviewing an estate plan is that often there will be entities formed. There will be trusts and perhaps business entities or charitable entities, depending on the particular nature of the plan. And a question we have to ask, and that often makes clients squirm in the seat when I start to grill them on this, is are the entities all funded? Do we have your residence, for example, deeded to your trust, your revocable trust, which is a simple kind of a very basic elementary thing, but we find that among people who have trusts, which should be anybody who owns real estate, frankly, that a staggering number of them, shucks, ma'am, I know I ought to have that in the trust, but just haven't got it there. It's not there, so we need to tidy up those things. And then,
so Rick, what would the percentage of people who have trusts that don't have them properly funded? What would you? I know you don't know that exactly, but what would you guess, just based on your practice?
You know, anecdotally, going off what I've seen in my practice, significantly more than half. I know even among my clients that I have prepared the deed and had them sign it, and I have recorded the deed and put it in the trust. I will have them come in for a review, and they'll say, oh, yeah, it was in the trust, but we refinanced 2 years ago, and the bank made us take it out, and we meant to put it back, and we meant to call you, and we just never did. So it's a lot. And they'll have even one property in, but, the family cabin or the – You know, the vacation property or the rental property or the grandma's house or whatever it is, the extra property that they have will often be left out. And that's just the real estate. The other one that I would say is closer to, I don't know, anecdotally here, 80-90% are financial accounts. Bank accounts and brokerage accounts are routinely left out of a trust. And so that our listeners know, the consequences of having those assets outside the trust is often, in the event of a death, we have to go through probate. So we have to spend thousands of dollars and take a year or more of time to go through a court proceeding to get those properties, those bank accounts or financial instruments, whatever, back where they should have been in the first place, in the trust. Only it just is a lot more expensive and takes a lot more time. So The whole point.
That's interesting, Rick, that you mentioned that. I was speaking with some people in California, and we may have mentioned this on the show before, but I know in some states probate is more expensive than in other states, and you can probably correct me on this, but I think in California it's this kind of a mandated percentage of the estate that gets paid when you go through probate. So what we've surmised is that often estate planning is not emphasized quite as much as it should be with clients maybe in these states, because going through probate is so lucrative for those who take who focus on that as part of their practice. My point here is not to take a shot at California necessarily. It's just that moving the assets into the proper places can save you in many instances not only thousands or tens of thousands, but maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars, because if they're not in these entities, then, as you say, they're going to go through probate and they're going to get exposed to that potential cost that they're allowed to charge.
Yeah, so I will say that, and I know you didn't mean to take a stab at California. I will take a stab at certain, not all, but certain California lawyers. I've had California lawyers tell their clients, oh, you don't need to put that property in the trust. Probate will take care of that. It's no big deal. And that's because they essentially earn a pretty substantial commission in the probate. It is a percentage, California is one of the highest cost probate states there is. So they will not only get there out of neglect, they'll get there out of poor or bad or misadvice. I want to wrap up a little bit here. I want to hit a few more things before the break. But as you look at your plan, you want to make sure it's what you want. You need to ask questions of yourself, such as how much is enough? Do I have enough for me? How much do I want to provide for my children? Is it right for me? And then a big, huge thing that we like to talk about on this program that's really near and dear to me, because I see the effect of it in clients' lives, is to make sure that your plan, whatever you're doing in your legal planning, is that it is focused on what matters most. And that is often not the financial. It's not the property issues. It's the emotional and spiritual and other consequences of wealth transfer on your family. And when we turn our attention to those matters, what we do changes. And so look at them, and you will know what you need to do. Our sixth strategy here in the last few minutes before break I want to introduce is the business audit. That's to take a look at what you're doing business-wise. Very often we encounter people that have no business at all. And there's you have no business having no business. If you don't have a business in America, you pay too much in taxes. If you're going to do any kind of high-level estate planning or asset protection planning or tax planning, one way or another, you're going to have a business. So I invite our listeners to examine the business purposes they have in life, and if they don't have a business purpose, obtain one. Some kind of highlights to be aware of: traditional corporations are really dinosaurs for most closely held businesses. There are certain kinds of businesses, insurance companies and banks, or publicly traded companies that have to be corporations. But beyond that, usually the LLC with the election to be taxed as a corporation is a more effective model, and we can talk about why. We're going to have to take a break here, Rich, and want to remind our listeners that we're going to be sharing one of our secrets is how to save $5.5 million in transfer taxes by taking a few simple steps before the end of 2012. And when we come back from break, we'll tell our listeners why single-member LLCs are not the good deal that they thought. They're actually quite dangerous. We'll talk about that when we come back from break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
How do you feel about the future? Tune in each week for Visionary Leader Extraordinary Life with host Kate Ebner. You can be a great leader by learning from the inspiring stories of amazing visionaries who are shaping our future. Everyone deserves to create their own vision, and Kate and her guests will share the tools that you need to make it happen. Make a weekly visit to the Voice America Business Channel for Visionary Leader Extraordinary Life every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Be inspired. Become inspiring.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
If you are looking for both an inside and insightful look at what you're not seeing in media coverage of today's legal, business, and policy battles, tune into In the Court of Public Opinion with host Jim Haggerty. What happens in the public arena affects us all. Whether you're following the latest high-profile court case, corporate crisis, or are just interested in government and policy, be sure to tune in every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. The witnesses are ready and the jury seated. So join us for our next session in the Court of Public Opinion.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Rich Bloomfield. I'm broadcasting from the Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix today. I wanted to mention that if you hear something on the show, and as you should today, want to speak with us about some of these things, we recommend that you call us at 480-324-8000 and set up a time so we can visit with you on the phone or in some other way. Rick, before the break, we were talking about business audits and specifically single-member LLCs. I know you're doing a presentation in Las Vegas today on this, so let's jump right back into that.
Thanks. You know, a lot of people set up LLCs thinking, ooh, I have an LLC now. I'm totally protected and my assets are protected. And LLCs can protect assets from two directions. There's inside liabilities and outside liabilities. Inside liabilities are liabilities associated with the activity or property that's owned by the LLC, and an effective LLC will contain that liability so it doesn't get out and contaminate other stuff. And then outside liabilities are liabilities that have nothing to do with whatever property or asset is owned by the LLC, and an effective LLC will exclude those and keep them from getting in. And with single-member LLCs, we have had now not just theory but actual cases in a number of states where the single member has been penetrated from both directions. We've had cases where the single member LLC, the plaintiff alleged, why should this inside liability, why shouldn't the member and the manager of this LLC be liable for this conduct, particularly where there's been fraud or gross negligence and a few other extreme things. But even in situations where there's not, there have been single-member LLCs that have been compromised in that way. And in terms of penetrating single-member LLCs to get into them, they are routinely ignored in bankruptcy settings. So the bankruptcy trustee has themselves appointed as the manager of the LLC and then takes all the assets. And we've had actual judgments entered ordering that the single-member LLC be disgorged and its assets distributed in satisfaction of the plaintiff's claim. So, you know, just a couple of little nuances here. Having an LLC member managed by a third-party manager, having more than one manager, having having multiple members to limit the liability and several things like that. Another business issue, lots of people have quote-unquote family limited partnerships, these have come under attack by the IRS. We have stopped doing family limited partnerships. We now do only business limited partnerships. All of our limited partnerships have a business purpose, and there are some nuances in how those are set up and operated to make sure that they actually do what you want. If you own a business, a fairly significant question to be asking yourself is when and how and under what circumstances am I getting out? You never build a room without a door and a window and know where the exits are so that if there's a fire, you can bail out. That's certainly true with a business. Having an orderly plan to sell, shut down, give to the kids, turn over to a partner, having a plan to do that is far better than having by the litigators and the attorneys that take over a company when somebody dies or when they're sued. So just be aware of that. If you have a partner, buy-sell planning is highly appropriate. With personally owned businesses, making sure that they're integrated into the estate plan, that they're not flapping in the wind out there. And then, of course, to just make sure that all of your documentation is fully in compliance and that there are no gaps or problems like that. That I want to move on now to the strategy, the next strategy, which is actually I think we're doing a reverse countdown if I can remember correctly. Strategy number 5, and this is the insurance audit, to look at what the heck is going on with your insurance policies, and in particular here, although we could talk about other kinds of liability insurance, but I guess I want to mention in the few moments we have for our program today, life insurance. One of the things that I encounter frequently as an estate planning attorney is that life insurance is improperly owned, that it's not owned by the trust, that it's owned in a way that, in fact, you're going to end up giving half of it to the IRS at death, or that even life insurance can be subject to probate. In the last 25 years, I've probated an awful lot of life insurance policies that are supposed to be probate exempt, and I've had clients had to pay taxes on a lot of life insurance policies because they've failed to have them owned properly. And then, of course, do I have enough or too much? Another big issue these days is obsolete or underperforming life insurance policies. You know, insurance companies create these policies based upon actuarial calculations and the law at the time and what the market's doing. And often the assumptions that were true back in the 90s or in the 80s when you bought the policy may no longer be true. And we encounter life insurance policies that are simply not performing to par. They're going to collapse if they don't have a huge amount of cash infused into them. And often there are newer, better, more efficient, less expensive policies that can outperform the old ones. It's kind of like I saw on YouTube, if I hate to refer to that, but I saw a crash between a 1950s car and a modern car. So, you know, a 50-year gap in the construction of these vehicles, and we think, oh, they don't build them like they used to. Those old cars were made of heavy gauge steel and were had a lot of metal wrapped around and were would protect you in the event of a crash. And they crashed these two cars head on, and then they recite the results. The occupants of the 50s vintage vehicle would have all been killed, severely injured. The occupants of the modern car would have walked away with minor injuries, but nothing life-threatening. And the technology's just improved. So we invite and encourage all of our clients to do an insurance audit. And something, Rich, that you and I can offer to our listeners is we have enough connections in the insurance industry. We can get a complimentary audit done for them at no cost. We pick up the tab on this, but it enables us to examine the policies. Are they good? Are they bad? And having recently gone through this process with a client, I was surprised that the insurance professionals who reviewed the policies for this particular client came back and said, hey, these are good policies. Keep them. There's nothing we can do to improve upon them. So we don't always find out bad news. We often find out good news, but in any event, it's worthwhile to check out those policies.
Rick, I just want to jump in here and say, too, that I know I've attended a couple of seminars recently where there's been discussion about trustees and their liability in regard to insurance policies. Often, as we just mentioned, insurance policies are purchased in a trust, and which is part of an estate planning structure, and it's there many times in order to provide liquidity at death to pay estate taxes or to accomplish some other goal. And if the trustee is not on top of his game and being sure that that policy is performing correctly, and it's not there, or it's not there like it should be there at someone's death, then they actually, as a fiduciary, have some liability there to the beneficiaries of that trust. So not only is it just a good idea economically, it's a good idea if you're a trustee or if you've been appointed a trustee. Many trustees are not really geared or equipped to really understand insurance. Why it would be a great idea to have a review done by us and by insurance professionals to make sure that they're carrying out their fiduciary responsibility.
You know, when people come to me with asset protection concerns, my first level of advice, and this is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but my first level of advice is don't do stupid stuff. It's usually the dumb things we do that get us in trouble legally, and this is one of those. The technology has changed. I've got one of those old brick telephones, and the reception is poor and bad, and when I need to make the emergency call, it doesn't work. Well, come on, time to upgrade to the modern phones. Same is true with insurance. I want to hit this strategy number four, which is I call it the giving paradox, and I just mention a few interesting facts. There's actually been a recent uptick, a recent increase in charitable giving, and then pose this question for our listeners to consider: who gives the most to charity? Is it the working or the idle? Is it the rich or the poor? Is it the political left or the political right? And why do people give money when they need money themselves? And some interesting things come out of this. There is a correlation between giving and being effective at making money. People who, before they have money, are in the habit of being generous and giving money are often the most effective then at making money and creating wealth. There are a lot of really powerful tools available these days. Family foundations have become, with, again, new technology, highly, highly effective and very inexpensive, virtually nothing to set up, and a very low administrative overhead to have a family foundation through donor advised funds, which we can help people set up, and split interest gifts, which is a way of giving away the future value of an asset but retaining the income. And through these kinds of strategies, we can increase income, lower taxes. We can take care of the heirs with proper planning and have a social legacy that outlives us. And more importantly, we can turn our wealth into a blessing rather than a curse. And I sometimes refer to this as the money and the mouth connection. We can put our money where our mouth is. We talk about how important social things are. And I personally believe that if the politicians who spent so much time harping about how we have poor people in America, if they would devote their time to fundraising and volunteer in a soup kitchen and give their time and effort to raising money to feed those poor people, it would be more effective than trying to get into the pockets of rich people through taxation to take it from them by force so that they can support bureaucrats and get even less money to the poor people. Anyway, that's my political speech for the day. We're going to come back from our break here in a few minutes. We'll be talking later on in the program about a simple, effective strategy that will save you up to $5.5 million if you take action before the end of the year. We'll talk about that and our IRA multiplier when we come back from break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back, everyone. Again, I want to mention that a great way to get with us and talk about these things that we're mentioning, particularly on the show today, is to call us at 480-324-8000, set up an appointment so we can talk by phone or face-to-face. Rick, right before the break, you talked about an IRA multiplier. What in the world is an IRA multiplier?
Well, thank you for asking the question. And very often, people don't understand the true nature of their IRA, and when we don't understand its true nature, we make planning decisions that have unintended consequences. And we can either lose our IRA, most of it, substantially all of it, or significant portions of it to taxes, or we can multiply it so we get the same value more than once. And I kind of want to illustrate this by asking a few gnarly questions, some tough questions here that people don't often think about. And the first one is, who really owns your IRA? And to kind of build on that, who gets to make the rules for your IRA? Do you make the rules for your IRA, or does someone else make the rules for your IRA? And who has the power to change how much you or your heirs get from your IRA? And that's true both during your lifetime and at death. Who has the power to make those decisions? Who has the power to take your IRA away from you? And when I say IRA, by the way, I mean not just individual retirement accounts, but all kinds of qualified retirement vehicles, 401ks and 403bs. And then kind of a last question here. Will future new or changed laws regarding IRAs, will they increase or decrease the amount that you and your family receive from your IRA? You know, I recently heard a report on the radio where an individual asked a politician, hey, what about this congressional committee that's been crafting proposed legislation to nationalize retirement accounts? And this individual was very concerned about it, and the politician didn't know anything about it. But I heard that, and I thought, well, this listener, this individual doesn't actually know what's going on, because I heard an economist some years ago describe retirement plans, and his exact words were off balance sheet assets of the federal government. He said, in fact, retirement assets already belong to the federal government. They are potential taxes waiting to be collected, and the politicians like to manipulate the rules to control when and how those taxes are paid. But at the end of the day, they know that they're going to take a big chunk of what they have in your IRA. And he went on to say, this economist went on to say, it's a rather clever program, because the politicians let you think that the IRA belongs to you so that you will take good care of it until they're ready to come collect it from you. And we see this. People put money in their IRA and they go, yippee-ki-yay, I got a tax deduction. If it's a traditional IRA, I got a tax deduction when I put it in, and yippee-ki-yay, I get to see tax deferred, or even they'll claim tax free growth on the IRA, and which it may be tax free with a Roth IRA, in fairness. But then they don't consider the big question: when and how am I going to take the money out of the IRA? And often we see people with bloated IRAs that are unwilling or afraid to take money out because they don't want to deal with the tax consequence. And so they think in the back of their mind, well, I'm just going to leave this IRA to my heirs. I'm going to leave it to my children or my grandchildren, and they'll get the benefit of this big, fat, bloated IRA. And the fact is, they won't. With the IRA, there's going to be income taxes on a traditional IRA. If the estate is large enough, which is not that large these days, there will also be estate taxes. There can also be excise taxes. IRAs can also lose their asset protection attributes. There's all kinds of things. So what the heck do we do? When we have an IRA, and here's a question I always ask people: do you have a distribution plan? Do you have a withdrawal plan? Do you know when and on what schedule, in what amounts you're going to take the money out? And do you have a day planned when all the money's going to be out of your IRA? And nobody does. The answer is always, what? I've never heard that question, because the money people never ask that question. They don't want you to take the money out of your IRA. They make more money the more is in there, so they want you to keep it there for a long, long time. So you get told again by your advisors, oh, just leave your money in your IRA, because that's how they make money, when there's money in the IRA. But really, the most tax-efficient thing you can do with your IRA is withdraw it during your lifetime and use it to fund your retirement. The IRA is indicative of the most tax-efficient use. IRA stands for Individual Retirement Account. And the most tax-efficient use of an IRA is in keeping with its congressional purpose, to fund the retirement of an individual. When we try to use our IRA as an inheritance device, it becomes very tax inefficient. And in fact, when we sit down and actually do the numbers, how much of the IRA are your children going to get? It's often not nearly as much as the people think. So what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? I've got a big IRA. How do I get out of this thing? Okay, two or three things here. Number one, I'm going to recommend that you come up with a distribution plan. I'm going to recommend that you identify an amount. And if you don't have your own distribution plan, the politicians will give you one. It's called required minimum distributions, so that you can use their plan or you can come up with your own. Odds are if you come up with your own, it will be more in line with what's important to you than if you just rely on the default plan handed you by the politicians. So come up with a distribution plan. When you take these distributions, I'm going to recommend that you obviously pay whatever taxes may be due on your IRA, number one. Number two, use whatever amount you need for your retirement. And number three, take the balance that's left over after paying taxes and funding your retirement and gift that money to a properly structured, irrevocable dynasty trust for the benefit of your heirs, and buy a highly leveraged investment that will pay many, many times of the amount that you put into it, and that is typically a life insurance policy. So often in fact, I had an individual I met at this same show that I'm here in Las Vegas doing. I met him a couple of years ago who had $4 million in his IRA, and I asked him, well, how much of that do you want your children to get? And he said, $4 million. And I said, well, do you know how much they're actually going to get? And it was not $4 million. We did some math, and he was rather alarmed when he saw the numbers. It was significantly less than $4 million. So we showed him how he could take, with a distribution plan, he could buy life insurance, and he could buy life insurance that was about 2.5 times as much as he had in his IRA. So it was $9 or $10 million of life insurance that he was going to get, which, by the way, in an irrevocable dynasty trust is income tax free, it's estate tax free, it's protected from creditors. And he was going to be able to provide this $9 or $10 million benefit for his children. Then the next piece is, we have you establish a family foundation and name that foundation as the sole, the only, the 100% beneficiary of your IRA after both husband and wife have passed away. So a spouse will be there first, but then after the spouse, it all goes to charity. Now, what are the net results of this? Three benefits. The client got the use and the benefit of their $4 million IRA during their lifetime. So it was a rainy day fund. If they had an emergency, they could use it, and they had the full use of that $4 million IRA, which was cool. Number two, the children are going to get $10 million tax-free at the second death, which is a lot more than they would have ever gotten out of the IRA. And that's just the amount they get on the day mommy and daddy are both dead. That $10 million obviously is going to be invested and will pay a return on their investment as well. Number three, and this is huge, we capture all the dollars that were going to be lost to taxes. We're going to take all the money that we were going to send to the politicians in Washington, and all of those tax dollars, instead of going away to the politicians, will come into the family foundation, where the client and his family and his children can make the decisions on what charitable and social causes benefit from that money. And I always like to ask people, who do you trust most to make the charitable decisions concerning your money? Would you rather make that decision yourself, or just send the money off to Washington and have the politicians make those decisions? Who do you trust to be wise in the use of the money? And I have yet to encounter anyone, even of on the extremes of any political persuasion, that will tell me, oh, yes, I would rather send the money to the politicians and let them make the decisions. They always would prefer to keep that decision-making capacity within their own family. So,
Rick, what happens when, let's say in your example, all $4 million was left in the IRA, and someone died, the owner of the IRA died, and that transfers to the donor advised fund? What are the tax implications of that?
The taxes are absolutely zero. Now, this, you cannot make this gift during lifetime. This is one of those gifts that it has to occur at death, or it doesn't work. But when you give your IRA entirely to charity, there's a tax credit against the tax liability. So all $4 million without any income tax, without any estate tax, all $4 million goes into the family foundation, and instead of giving it up in taxes. So we saved millions and millions of dollars, millions of dollars of income taxes, millions of dollars of estate taxes. We're coming up on a break that we need to take here. We've got two more strategies to talk about when we come back, one of which will include this, a simple way to avoid $5.5 million of taxes by taking simple action before the end of 2012. So we can hit these things when we come back from break in a few minutes, Rich.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Leadership is a vital skill set in today's competitive global economy. Being a leader is not enough. To succeed, you must optimize your performance and know how to imbue others in your organization with leadership skills. Practical, actionable leadership insights are the focus of Leadership Development News, hosted each Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, by Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler on the Voice America Business Channel. Doctors Greenberg and Nadler, who coach global leaders on how to be most effective, will share their insights and contacts. The path to leadership excellence begins here.
Is your business model robust enough? In today's ever-changing business environment, people are working to transform themselves, their futures, and their business. Tune in to Business Reinvention with your host, Nancy Lynn. To stay ahead of the game in business, you have to constantly reinvent yourself and your organization. With Nancy's experience and that of her guest experts, you'll learn from stories of inspiration, innovation, and forward thinking. Listen for Business Reinvention, live every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Okay, before break, we were talking about IRAs. We're going to move on now. I want to quickly hit this strategy number two, which is integrated dynasty planning. And I'm going to tell a little story about my angel mother who passed away over 18 years ago. She loved to cook and to bake. And I remember her telling me many, many times that cake and bread have exactly the same ingredients in them, and that what you get depends upon what order you put the ingredients together and what you do with them while you're putting them together. And that metaphor illustrates a significant point. Often the difference between a completely dysfunctional plan with broken pieces that don't connect, that don't talk to each other, that don't work, and with stuff getting left out, is not the ingredients, because people will have the right stuff. They'll have they'll have good entities, they'll have good trusts, good LLCs, but they will be put together badly. So a fully integrated dynasty plan will mean that the right entities are structured together, connected with each other in the right way, so that the client is able to retain control. We're able to have the assets protected from third-party liabilities. We'll be able to manage the tax liabilities so that we can take advantage of whatever benefits the law gives us, and we'll have flexibility so we can move and change with changing circumstances and needs. And an integrated dynasty plan will also be integrated on the level of having the advisory team communicate with each other. And this is one of the reasons why Rich and I have partnered up for this program and for a lot of the planning with our clients. We find that we each do what we do, but we don't do what the other one does. And I cannot be at the top of my game as a lawyer unless I have the input and the ideas and the feedback and the information that Rich as a CPA can give me. And I like to flatter myself and think that it's true on the other side of the equation. But
absolutely.
It's just that integrated planning is so it's both a social and an advisory thing. It's a legal structure and a financial thing, and that I cannot overemphasize the importance of that. Too many people come through our doors that have really done excellent planning, but it's poorly implemented, badly structured. It's like using the highest quality building materials to construct a house. And then you look up and there's holes in the roof and holes in the walls and wonder why the breeze is blowing through it. And the execution, the implementation was just done poorly. So we want to have that fully integrated plan. You know, Rich, we are to the point. We have been promising our listeners that we would share with them a way to save nearly $5.5 million in taxes. This is our number one strategy. And I've been hogging the microphone here, so I want to share. And why don't you introduce and bring us to this our final strategy here? What is this the big secret strategy on how to avoid $5.5 million on transfer taxes?
Great, this is my favorite topic these days, Rick. It seems that as we get closer to the end of 2012, there's just an awful lot of folks out there that are figuring this out, very concerned about it, and it's called the lifetime gift exclusion. And what this means is that right now, this was passed back on December 17th of 2010, where Congress gave all of us a gift, and most of us didn't know about it. But what it allows us to do is to pass on during our life $5 million, and actually this year it's indexed, so it's $5.12 million, to anyone, to our heirs, theoretically. And the important thing to really understand about this is that it is going away at the end of 2012. So we're encouraging everyone to take advantage of this by taking a look, going through the planning that you've talked about today, and taking a look at their plan and figuring out, wow, I have an awful lot of assets sitting around here. How could I move those before the window closes to a place where they're not going to be taxed at my death or any other time for that matter? So the interesting thing too is, Rick, that the when we go to the end of the year, if Congress does nothing, there's going to be $1 million that you can gift during your life, and the tax rate on everything above $1 million goes from 35% today to 55% then. So this is not something to be scoffed at or to think that it's going to go away or that somehow we're going to be safe from this. In our current economic condition in the country, it's not likely that there's going to be a lot of effort put into preserving this this exclusion, which is at $5 million. And it's not only at $5 million for lifetime gifts, it's $5 million for estates, but most of us don't choose to die, and for generation skipping tax, which means that we would be giving to a generation beyond the one just below us. So, in both of those, so the gift, the lifetime gift, and the generation skipper things, we can do something about today, and we really ought to be doing that. So, I work with farmers, I work with business owners, I work with all kinds of people who have built estates that are worth a lot of money. Maybe they don't have a lot of liquidity, but you don't have to have a lot of liquidity to do the planning, and it can keep you from having to generate liquidity by selling the farm or selling the business at an opportune time to pay tax. So that's, if you look at $10 million and 55% tax rate, that's about $5.5 million that a person could save. And there are a surprising number of people out there that are in this situation.
You know, I want to just comment slightly here on the political environment. I just read a survey that 36% of Americans think we have no benefit whatsoever from having a wealthy class. They think that people who have wealth are evil and should be destroyed. That's pretty affirmative. And you can guess certain political parties have significantly more of that mentality than others. But people who think this way are marching in the streets. They are creating chaos and turmoil. They have politicians in the White House and in Congress who are sympathetic and champion their cause and will legislate and regulate on their behalf. So it's a critical time. If preserving wealth matters, it's a critical time to do something. So we need to wrap this up, Rich. I don't want to remind our listeners and the call to action: review your state and plan. Don't just leave it on the shelf. Pull it out and look at it. Audit your business structures. Audit your insurance situation. Call us and let us help you pull that off. Figure out a way to implement your charitable giving into your plan. Multiply your IRA. You can get several times its value out of it rather than just leaving it all to the IRS. Make sure that your planning is fully integrated, that the business and the estate and the insurance and the financial and the investment and the charitable planning, all the pieces talk to each other and work together. And then I cannot overemphasize, Rich, you did a great job of showing this. This great importance of taking this lifetime gift before the end of the year.
Oh, thank you, everyone, for listening today. Again, we're available at 480-324-8000. Pick up the phone, give us a call. Let's sit down and go through these steps that we've talked about today. They pay off huge, huge dividends. Thank you for listening, and we will see you here again next week, next Tuesday morning at 7 a.m. Pacific time.
Thank you. Signing off.
Thank you for listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern time, 7 a.m. Pacific time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.